Welcome to Lily of the Herbs Talks. Lily created this podcast to share herbal wisdom and plant magic. She seeks to catch the plant people nestled throughout Australia and talk to them about their secrets and knowledge of traditional plant remedies, foraging, medicine making, and plant connection. Here I am up on the sunny coast with Lucy the naturopath. Hi, Lucy.
Hey, Lily of the Herbs.
So Lucy and I have been talking about doing a podcast for how many years now?
Since you've begun, and yes. I've had too much stage fright.
Which you'll be great. And as I was saying, all of my podcasts, this is what I love about them. Just, I think there's so many people with wisdom, and you are included in this, that don't share a lot of their knowledge. And we've got a lot to learn from you and your years of experience. So thanks. I guess, as I always start, I'd love to hear what put you on the journey of naturopathy. What inspired that, that beginning of that journey?
So in my early 20s, I went to India. So I had a big pilgrimage there, and picked up lots of gut microbes, and came back to Australia, and I saw a naturopath who helped me with my gut. And at the same time, it helped to clear my skin. And I'd always, always, always had problem with skin, had acne since my early teens. So had that identified gut-skin link for the first time, and that began my journey into naturopathy. I actually started studying nutrition because I'm a big lover of food, and the whole idea of food as medicine really appealed to me. So enrolled into Endeavour College of Natural Health, where the first year or two, they put all the nutritional students in the same classes as the naturopathy students. And switched over to naturopathy after the first year because I was learning about all these herbs and all these things they can do, which I didn't know anything about. I knew food, I didn't know herbs. And yeah, I haven't looked back since. So graduated back in 2017, and I love plants just as much as, or nearly as much as food now. Still a big foodie. But yeah, obviously treat my patients with herbs and diet and lifestyle practices as well.
Beautiful. Yeah, I think that for me, I think that I really love the way, you know, we talk a lot about clients. Lucy's one of those friends that I'll call when I've got a difficult case and ask for suggestions. And Lucy's always really helpful with that. And I think what I really enjoy about the way that you tackle things is you've got quite a clinical and investigatory mind, like, you know, and you're not afraid. You love tests. You're always sending your clients off for tests. You're like, we'll need a full bloods for that, you know. Yeah, so you're not afraid of that side of things, and I think that's wonderful. And you know, I tend to be less on the testing side, but one thing, yeah, I think that you're quite thorough and you're really good at, I mean, just also holding clients accountable, I feel, as well. Just being like, you need to show up again. I need you to come in. Let's actually get to the bottom of this and do a really proper job, which is beautiful. And something I've, yeah, been talking with you over the years, and it seems like has become a bit of a niche for you, or an area of specialization, is female intimate health. So what, you know, why did you decide to specialize in this? Why are you passionate about it?
Yeah, so I started off, I guess, specializing in skin health because I had my own problems with acne and still love that, still treat that a lot. But a couple of years ago, or 3 years ago, I was working part-time with a health company who developed a product range to help women with intimate health problems. So got a lot of training around the space of infections such as bacterial vaginosis, cytolytic vaginitis, recurrent candida, as well as atrophy that can happen in low estrogenic states. So menopause is a big one, but also young mums, so breastfeeding mums postpartum who can have shifts in their estrogen, so lowered estrogen with breastfeeding and things, and not really having any intravaginal products until that point on the market. So I hadn't really known much about that, and, you know, herbal pessaries and using low volume irrigations intravaginally, and just became really, really interested in seeing what could be done when sometimes taking herbs and nutrients orally doesn't quite scratch the surface of these women who had had recurrent problems again and again and again, and then seeing that there were tools that can be done to help them there. So, yeah, I was kind of thrown into it through working with this particular health company at the time and talking about the products a lot, and they sent me off to do 6 months of education in the field as well, which I'm so grateful for. And yeah, I kind of have started my own journey in supporting women within the intimate health space since then and getting really good results.
Beautiful, great. Yeah, because it's something that isn't, I guess, yeah, I mean, I don't feel like, I get a lot of messages like, oh, should I yoni steam or this and that,
I get those too.
Yeah, and there isn't a lot of, and I guess when it comes down to it, when you've got thrush or BV, it's like, do I put garlic? Do I just shove
Yeah.
garlic up there? That's
Which you can do, but yeah, tread carefully. You don't want to lose it.
Exactly, yes. So there's a few myth stories, not exactly sure how to go forward in these areas. So I guess I'd like to talk to you a bit about, yeah, I guess, well, why don't we talk about thrush? Do you want to start talking about thrush?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I guess before we talk about thrush, it's important to know about what a healthy vaginal microbiome is. So, unlike the gut, where you have this sort of polymicrobial mix, so different types of bacteria, within the vagina, we actually want it to be quite stable. So we want there to be a dominance of lactobacillus species and not much else, to be honest. And that's because the lactobacillus species, they help to create an acidic environment or an acidic pH. So on the pH scale, if you're familiar with that, the lower the number, the more acidic it is. So the vagina, when it's healthy, should sit between a pH of 3.6 and 4.5. And that's a similar or same acidity to things like red wine or grapefruit juice. So nice and acidic, and that prevents other organisms from coming in. And we'll always have transient organisms pass through, or they're in sort of lower amounts where they're not going to do any harm. But as soon as there's a fluctuation in the vagina microbiome, and maybe there's not as much as those lactobacillus species as we would like, things can start to become alkaline, and species like Candida or Gardnerella, so that's your BV species, things like that can sort of start to multiply. And that's where we get those really annoying symptoms. So with thrush, it causes quite a lot of inflammation, and that's where you can get that burn, that itch, and as well as changes in discharge. So thrush being a fungal pathogen, we want to look into antifungals to help with treatment. And like my favorite antifungal herb is one called Horopito, and that's a herb that comes out of New Zealand. So there's different washes and oral preparations and creams that can be used intravaginally for that. And also looking at something that is quite painful. Sometimes people can't go straight into having that antimicrobial intravaginally because they're so inflamed. And the first part of the treatment might involve actually soothing that irritation before they're able to go in with capsules or pessaries. And there's other great things that help with that. So that might be sea buckthorn berry oil, for example, to go in and soothe, first of all, or just a really basic, like, I don't know, shea butter, pessary could also be helpful there as well. And then once that inflammation's brought down, you can then go in with some of these stronger antifungal treatments if we're looking at Candida. And I stress that the Candida treatment would be very much different from bacterial vaginosis treatment or other species as well.
And do you feel like the thrush, candida, overgrowth in the vagina can stem from the gut microbiome? Because
Absolutely.
my main experience with thrush was many years ago, having a wisdom tooth infection, taking antibiotics maybe 10 years ago, and then yet experiencing thrush. And that was really interlinked there.
And I've had my own experiences with thrush as well. And for me, it's whenever I'm eating lots of sugary foods, or I'm on holiday somewhere really tropical as well, and eating all the wonderful things that Southeast Asia might have on offer, and then get home and lo and behold, I'm feeling a bit itchy and irritated down there. So yeah, I would always, always, always do oral treatments alongside intravaginal treatments.
And maybe cut down on the sugar
Oh,
at that
totally.
point in time,
Yeah.
damp foods, yeah.
Yeah, very multifaceted in the treatment approaches, but really cool that we can be having treatments intravaginally as well. And that's what
Yes.
really hits the nail on the head because you hear about people, and I have patients all the time who have been having thrush on and off for years. And they can be taking fluconazole from the GP, and whether that's intravaginal or oral antifungals, and it's just not hitting the nail on the head. And interestingly, there's actually multiple types of candida, and the fluconazole preparation is just effective against Candida albicans. And you have all of these other types of candida as well, which I see on the vaginal microbiome testing that I do with a lot of my intimate health patients. And that's where herbs are really beautiful, in that there's so many different components of the herb itself. So, its antifungal effects isn't just against the Candida albicans, but all these other types of candida that you can have. So, if we're looking at candida, we've also got the crucii or the tropicalis, and something like the horopito herb I spoke of, the plant compounds are antifungal against them all, which that's where Western medicine doesn't quite meet herbal medicine as well. So, yeah, it's important to consider all these things, and people who are having recurrent infections, introducing herbs can be a really nice thing to help to finally clear that.
Yeah, and so when you say intra vaginally, you're talking about pessaries. So should we talk a little bit about pessaries for thrush? So a pessary, what's the def your definition of a pessary?
Oh God, I don't know if I have one. It's something that's so a herbal preparation, or nutritional as well. There's nutritionals out there that can be helpful too, but something that can be inserted intravaginally as comfortably as you would insert a tampon. And again, it's very, very patient dependent as well. And there's been people I've treated who've never inserted a tampon because it's uncomfortable for them. And so everyone is different. But with the pessaries I use, they're either in a gelatin base, so water soluble, or a cacao butter base, so sort of that more fatty base. And then there's other herbs. So I, full disclosure, I work with an online dispensary. I don't make my own pessaries, but they have multiple different types. And depending on what I'm seeing on testing, once again, looking at a vaginal microbiome test result, which not everyone does, but it is really, really helpful to understand and not sort of go in and treat blindly, because candida can absolutely present with the same symptoms as aerobic vaginitis, which can also cause that itch and irritation and changes in discharge. But it's good to see what's happening there, along with careful case taking and even doing pH tests over a 30-day period as well. But yeah, the pessary is something that's introduced intravaginally, and it's going to have a localized activity. So if we're looking at candida, we want to be having something that's an antifungal and anti-inflammatory activity. So one that I like to use is something with a little bit of garlic in there, golden seal, and sea buckthorn berry oil. So it's going to have not only the antifungal activity, oh, and that's in a cacao butter base as well, which is
And
nice
then
and
in
soothing.
a capsule.
No, so this one isn't in a capsule, which is really good because although I do use capsules intravaginally in patients who might have BV, so there's less inflammation, someone who's got candida, at least in an acute flare, sometimes the capsule shell itself degrading intravaginally, so with the body's temperature, just having that capsule shell there can be quite irritating. So the pessaries, they come in, I don't really know how to explain it. It's like a little push packet thing.
Oh yeah, and they come out and they're sort of
Yeah.
solid. I've actually made them like this with coconut oil, but put them into ice cube trays, so like long thin ice
Perfect.
cube trays. So you can,
Yeah.
if you do want to make this and you've got some tincture and a bit of cacao butter, put them in the long thin ones that you can then insert, and you put them in the freezer so they solidify, and then you can insert them
Exactly.
yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. So these ones they kind of come in this like this foil encasing so they're able to sort of travel because my online dispensary is located in Queensland, so it gets nice and hot. And then the idea is they're individually encased and you pop them in the fridge or the freezer as soon as they arrive. And then at night, I prescribe them at night because then before bed, you're lying down, gravity's on your side. So more of an opportunity for the therapeutics to have their effect. So yeah, inserting that pessary. So Candida, I would be looking at that Horopitto, but also some garlic extract in that pessary. Golden Seal, which is an amazing anti-inflammatory and antimicrobial, and then the sea buckthorn, which is going to help to reduce that inflammation as well. And it just melts away with the body temperature. It's really nice in that cacao butter base. You don't need to worry about any of the capsule shell remnants. Of course, there will be a discharge with the melted pessary. That is normal. Some people don't, they get a bit of a shock when they see that, but that is normal. There will be some form of discharge. So, wearing like a panty liner or something and a cotton panty liner is helpful. So that's what I'd look at for Candida specifically, but it'd be completely different if someone had vaginal atrophy, for example. So that might be a fennel oil in a cacao butter base.
Yeah, you like your fennel oil. Talk about the fennel oil for vaginal
I
atrophy.
love fennel oil. So fennel seeds, they contain isoflavones, which basically have the same molecular structure as estrogen. So we have the most abundant estrogen receptors within the vagina wall. So, as you can imagine, if someone is shifting into menopause, so a stage of life where we're not having as much estrogen circulating around the body to bind to those estrogen receptors, there's going to be a cellular change. And this is where you hear of vaginal dryness when you reach menopause, but it's not just that. It's so much more. So there can be more recurrent UTIs at that age. There can be painful sex or painful cervical screenings. Some people can't even masturbate, they can't wear jeans. It can really impact, well, exercise is a big one as well. Women starting to notice it at the gym, I've heard a lot. So it can really impact their quality of life. And often they're just told by their GPs or their gynecologists that that's just the way it is now. But there's so much more that can be done with fennel. So fennel contains isoflavones, which have the same molecular structure as estrogen. So when we introduce fennel into the vagina, I look at fennel oil, which is basically just fennel seeds that have been macerated and put into organic extra virgin olive oil. That can then be made into a pessary. I've got a recipe that I'm happy to share. Otherwise, I have them ready made already through my online dispensary. But they're able to sort of act like estrogen within the vagina. So, as estrogen starts to decline with menopause, the tissue wall of the vagina will start to thin, which is where you get all of those symptoms and can be impacted with everyday things. So, introducing fennel oil will help to essentially plump up the tissue wall of the vagina. And so that women are less likely to have those symptoms. And it's something sort of good to get on top of, if someone is starting to enter into perimenopause, so that they might still be having their menstrual cycle, but, getting into that stage of life, or even women who are pregnant because they will have that estrogen lower whilst they're breastfeeding, and they can also have a similar symptom presentation to women in menopause. So, there's a lot that can be done, and all of this is, backed up with the clinical study as well that had, I forget how many women, I think it was about 50 women, half were randomized to receive just a normal oil, so without the fennel, or a cream or something, and then the other half were randomized to receive a fennel preparation intravaginally. And after 8 weeks of nightly application, there was no change in the women without the fennel. And the women with fennel, they actually had not only symptom change, so they had improvements in all of their symptoms. They actually measured the tissue wall of the vagina, and they found that there was more cells within the tissue wall, as well as they had a more beneficial pH, which is, goes back to what I was saying earlier, where a healthy vagina needs to be that acidic pH. And they've found that healthy, I guess, estrogen within the vagina or estrogen receptor that are targeted have this sort of synergistic relationship with the vaginal microbiome. So we have more abundance of estrogen. There is it keeps those lactobacillus species nice and happy and healthy, and therefore the vagina more acidic. So also through helping with the fennel oil in low estrogenic states, it can also help to prevent UTIs as well, because UTIs and infections, they can occur once we have the shift in the microbiome and things become more alkaline. So not only is it backed up with, placebo-controlled trials, but it's something that I've seen in my own clinic as well. And when I worked for this other company, I would support other naturopaths and integrative doctors, and a lot of them were starting to utilize this fennel oil, which is really
Amazing.
exciting.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I want to use some fennel oil.
Plump it
Plump
up.
it up. Sounds great. Okay, beautiful. Okay, so you make fennel oil, pessaries. We've got talked about using pessaries for thrush. And then I guess we'll talk a bit about bacterial vaginosis as well. And then we'll talk a little bit about the pH testing that you do. So, but one other, the other two, there's two types of testing that you've been talking about. So the first one is actually just going to the GP and having it swab. Yeah, so you can actually detect what microbes might be in the vagina. And that can be important. And then there's a different kind of testing. So you can test at home, which Lucy can talk about, the pH of your vagina microbiome as well. So let's talk about bacterial vaginosis. Yeah.
So, bacterial vaginosis, or BV, is typically caused by a aerobic, sorry, anaerobic. So, it's a bacteria that doesn't utilize oxygen, and that bacteria is called Gardnerella vaginalis. It doesn't cause as much inflammation as Candida or aerobic bacterial species, which are completely different bacteria. It's generally doesn't come with, so less inflammation, generally less irritating symptoms like burning, pain, but it can cause changes in odor and discharge. So discharge typically more watery, more grey. The odor can be more fishy. So it's just a nuisance, really. And if we sort of look at it with impacts on fertility, I mean, any sort of microbiome shift can impact fertility as well. So that's something to really consider if any listeners are wanting to fall pregnant, is to do something like a vaginal microbiome test just to see where they're at. If there have been has been a history of STIs, which a lot of the population we do have, I think that needs to be talked about, or have had. So Gardnerella causes the BV. It's a lot easier to go in with treatments quite quickly, because you don't have to worry about having any sort of irritating symptoms flare like you would with Candida, for example. So Gardnerella loves an alkaline environment, so pH over 4.5, and generally will flourish with that low lactobacillus species. So I like to look at green tea is really great as an anti-Gardnerella herb, and lactulose as well. So lactulose isn't a herb. It is a prebiotic, so it helps to feed our friendly lactobacillus species. These two are found together. So I prescribe a capsulated product, and this is where I mean capsules can be more tolerated by people with BV because they're not as inflamed. And I get them to insert this particular capsule product, which contains lactulose and a green tea extract. So it's really patient dependent. So they're inserting the capsule before bed. Again, gravity's on their side. The capsule will break down with the body temperature and release the capsule contents intravaginally. So having that localized activity with the green tea being antimicrobial and the lactulose helping to feed those good lactobacillus species so they can multiply, they can flourish, and they create a more acidic pH, which the Gardnerella doesn't like. It can't thrive in an acidic pH of the vagina. So that's one way in which the BV can be treated, but there's all sorts of other things that can be done. So lactulose can be purchased as a liquid form alongside hydrogen peroxide. I know it sounds scary, but doing a 7-day course of low volume vaginal irrigations can be done before introducing the green tea. And then this is the thing, like, it's never one infection in isolation. Like, I've never had a vaginal microbiome test, and that's a test that I order for my patients. It's sort of like the difference between getting a stool test done through your GP and getting, a complete digestive stool analysis done through a healthcare provider like me. It just gives a lot more information, not only with the different types of candida I spoke of, but different types of bacteria and also the good bacteria as well. So the full microbiome picture. And I've gotten patients, a lot of patients to do these, and I've never seen just one bacteria in isolation, Like, it's always a polymicrobial infection. There might be a little bit of ureaplasma, there might be a little bit of Enterococcus faecalis with
There's a
a little bit of
lot.
candida. And that's why, it may be simple BV, but it's like, oh, okay, this person has Gardnerella, but they've also got this co-presenting candida. And that's when things get complicated because it's like, all right, I need to tread carefully with the candida. So I might not be going in with the capsule straight away. I might be looking at that pessary I spoke of earlier with the garlic and the sea buckthorn berry oil and the golden seal. And then, if it's a completely different microbial profile, then that's where I look at my all the other different pessaries and different herbal combinations I've got access to that are more tailored to that person and what their vagina microbiome is doing. So I do, I guess, encourage people to do that test. It only costs 160 or 170, including postage. It's just self-swab, so it's just done, one swab done directly after the other by that patient themselves. Ideally, the swab is taken when they're having symptoms or a typical time that symptoms flare. I hear a lot of women that they might say, oh, just after my period every single month I get these symptoms. And I say, okay, that's when you want to take this swab so we can see what's going on. Or if there's no rhyme or reason, then that's where different tests can come in, which is the pH test kits. So that's literally, I don't know if you've seen those pH strips or litmus papers, that you might test the pH of your pool water or something with. Same thing can be done with vagina pH test kits. So I sell 30-day test kits on my website. And that's just to see what shifts are happening in a 30-day period. Because yes, having a look at it on that day when, there might be symptoms, gives a lot of information, but what's happening on the days leading up to symptom presentation and symptoms resolving as well. So looking at it over a 30-day cycle, if the woman's still menstruating, there's going to be a lot of natural shifts that happen in the pH anyway. So, with menstruation, blood is more alkaline, so that's going to shift the pH. There's also shifts that can occur with ovulation as well, but through patients doing 30-day pH tests every day for 30 days, I also get them, there's a booklet that comes with that, and they record their physical activity that day. Have they had sex and what type of sex? Are they stressed? Are they taking any supplements? Are they have they changed their diet at all, taken any medications? And through doing that pH testing, I've been able to identify one patient who didn't want to wear underwear. She was a PT. She didn't want to wear underwear with her tight gym pants because she didn't like the way the panty liner appeared with that. So she was wearing the synthetic pants, which weren't breathing properly, and she was staying in them all day and getting all hot and sweaty. And so that was one trigger we were able to identify, and in conjunction with her symptoms would flare premenstrually. So that's when I knew that, 5 days leading up to that would be the best time in which she could introduce these herbal
And isn't
pessaries.
your immune system lower around bleed but higher around ovulation? So potentially, if there are bacteria or anything, that they might proliferate more in that time, you think?
If it's anything to do with that, fluctuations in estrogen, it's poorly understood, but it can have this response with histamine. So, high estrogen, higher histamine response as well. And that can exacerbate a lot of inflammatory conditions, such as an infection or infectious microbe. But everyone is different. Like, there is no rhyme or reason that, oh, it's, just after menstruation, just before. With, like, I've seen patients, it's completely different from one patient to the other with when within their cycle they might have a symptom flare, which is why doing a 30-day pH tracking helps to not only see the numbers, like, okay, just after menstruation, you're actually a 4.6, so you're more alkaline, which opens you up to being more infectious then. And that's when we need to do some things to help alkalize the vagina, such as, like, lactulose, for example. It might be completely different for someone else. So it's just good to sort of track that and see that shift. And then, once we look at treatments based on when they most need it, based on those results, they might down the track, 3 months down the track after treatment, just do a 1-day pH test at that time, which they might have once been alkaline, to make sure that they are indeed within a healthy vagina pH and therefore microbiome, rather than having to do another full 30 days. But nevertheless, people like to do another 30 days down the track as well.
Beautiful. Okay, well that's great, Luce. It's nice knowing there's all these herbs to help bring us back into balance. You can just put on up, pop them up
Get on
there,
up there.
get on up
I
there.
tell people to put all sorts of things up there.
Yeah. And I guess you also sort of touched on a little bit, why, what's the getting to the root cause as well, like why is this happening? And that could be, sexually transmitted, or wearing clothes, being in an, that are restrictive or synthetic, or it could be that you're in an environment you might that's damp or humid, or it might be that you are exposed to different foods, or yeah, there can be a number of reasons why things like, things occur, I guess.
Exposure to other people or sexual partners is a big one as well.
Yep.
Partner treatment's important as well if they're open to it, of course.
Yeah, and I guess with a partner, how are you going to treat a partner? Because they can't be, they're going to take things orally then?
So if we're talking about a partner who has a penis, then I prescribe, actually, so this horopito herb, they've got a wash. Unfortunately, the branding, I think it's called, like, vagina wash or something, which they should change that. But I get the partner, if they're male, to actually do a penile wash with this horopito wash. So it's called Colorex, where they, if they have a foreskin, they fold that back during a shower, and just getting that wash to, like, under the foreskin. And that's just going to expose them to that antimicrobial horopito herb. And I think there's a little bit of tea tree in that as well. So that's one thing they can do. And there's so many intimate health specific probiotics that are out there on the market now. So probiotics, it's so key to have the correct probiotic species to achieve what you're trying to look for here. And when I talk about the vagina and the penile microbiome, which I'm about to learn a lot more about, which I'm really excited about, but the vagina microbiome, Lactobacillus crispatus, so that is the specific strain that is most abundant within the female vagina. You can actually get in a probiotic as well. And I've prescribed people to take probiotics intravaginally too, but taking it orally as well, particularly If they're inflamed at the first part of treatment and they can't tolerate intravaginal probiotics, they say take it orally or take it both ways. And the male partner or the partner without a vagina can certainly take that orally as well. So there's all sorts of like things they can do if they're open to it. And of course, taking oral antimicrobial herbs as well. And for the duration of treatment, with the initial patient who comes and sees me, I ask them to use barrier methods of contraception during that time. Ideally, they don't have intercourse during that time, which never happens. They always do. But when they do, I just say, oh, if you can use barrier methods, and then that way, because the worst thing is treating someone and then you do all this hard work and then they go have unprotected sex and they're back to square one. But after that initial treatment, the whole goal is to have a robust vaginal microbiome that they're not going to pick anything up, if they eat a piece of cake or if they have penetrative sex or oral sex with their partner, they're not going to just get the first thing that comes their way because they have worked themselves up to a robust microbiome that is, resistant to these things or stronger against these things. But certainly in those initial stages of treatment, using like a condom, for example, is really, really key.
Beautiful. What about, I was just thinking about intercourse, like penetrative intercourse. What are you a fan of lubes, things like that?
Yeah, so I question all of my patients on what are you using down there? What every single thing that gets down there, what are you using? Because there's all sorts of things, sex toys,
And
lube.
after we talked about that, that has also made me think about what's your opinion on soaps and washes and all of that kind of thing.
Yeah. So any of these, you want them to be marketed at like pH friendly. So the keyword here, pH friendly. And there's a lot of great brands out there. So Frenchy condoms and lube. So they use a water-based lube. They have their products that don't have all these crazy like flavors and things that make it feel more hot or more cold that aren't going to shift the pH. Okay. Of course, there's always going to be a natural shift in pH. With intercourse because it's vigorous. There might be alkaline saliva involved and semen's alkaline as well. But there is always going to be that shift. But we don't want to push that over the edge through lubes that they don't look at trying to stop that change in pH. So I love the brand Frenchy. Their condoms actually contain hyaluronic acid as well. So if you think about hyaluronic acid, sounds scary, but it's in a lot of like face serums and things to help sort of trap in the moisture and plump it up. So it can be used in the same way with their condoms, which is awesome. And yeah, their lube won't shift the pH either. And then there's another brand called Her. So these are both available from the health food store. I sell the Frenchie through my online dispensary as well. But these are two brands that I trust that won't change the pH. So they're pH friendly. And that's anything that's being used down there. These need to be, we need to think about these things basically. And if people are coming to see me to support their intimate health, I ask all of these questions as well. Sex toys, are you? Washing them in a pH friendly wash as well. Are you washing them at all? Like all these things are so important. And even, if people are really sensitive, then, if they're using their digits or fingers or someone else's fingers, they've got to make sure they're clean as well, because that's another way in which microbes can be introduced into a microbiome that might not be as healthy or robust as it could be. So, yeah, with lubes, I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, no,
They're
that's
fine.
good.
Lubes are fine. You mentioned coconut oil earlier. Coconut oil, I probably wouldn't suggest as being something to help support a healthy microbiome just because it's got the caprylic acid in there, which you hear about great topically as a like antifungal or antimicrobial, but it's a little bit too strong to use in the intimate health space, just because the caprylic acid can actually kill off the healthy lactobacillus species. Cacao butter and shea butter, they're much better options because they don't contain that caprylic acid. So if people are using a lube, then I would suggest that. Or if they're making pessaries, to find some shea butter or cacao butter to use as a base versus the coconut oil.
Beautiful. Okay, great, Luce. And yeah, I mean, I don't know. I've always felt skeptical about, I think, just anything synthetic as well. Like, just, you know, if it's got products which you actually understand or can make sense of, but anything like perfumes or fragrances, artificial synthetics, anything like that, I'm just like, I think you should just keep away from that, and soaps and all these
I
sorts of
know,
things.
it's
It's, yeah.
scary, isn't it?
And also soap, you know, that's alkaline, washing the vagina. Like, it's, yeah, when it's in an
I think
acidic
there was a bit of a
environment.
trend once upon a time where it's like women gotta be squeaky clean, which isn't the, we do have natural discharge, and that does change throughout a woman's menstrual cycle as well. If someone's using soap because they're actually ashamed of what they smell like, what odor is coming from there, generally that there might actually be an infection anyway, and that's just going to be aggravated if they are using soap. So I always ask, do you use any soaps down there? And if they say yes, I say why.
Yes.
And then, understanding why, because if someone has got BV, it can be a really strong odor, and you can be ashamed of that. I've had BV before, briefly, and I knew because I was getting changed and I could smell myself. What was the first thing I wanted to do? I wanted to put some soap down there,
Yeah.
but that's not really treating the cause. We need to figure out why there is that odor and treating that so you're not wanting to need to or think you have to use soap.
Yeah, beautiful. And all right, so that's good to know as well. And finally, like, we're just going back, you know, something back to the shoving the garlic and the yogurt up the vagina. Can we bust this myth? Like, you know, I feel like if you do have thrush, yeah, there's inflammation in there. So, and garlic is just so strong, it might be really irritating, I think, to just put an entire clove up your vagina.
Listen, it's a traditional herbal medicine thing, and it can be utilized with some infections. So there's the, oh God, we're going deep here. There's molecular, I can't even say it, molluculite infections. So that's things like ureaplasma and things. Garlic has been found to be an antimicrobial, herb, I guess, against that. And there's, I oh, see, I don't recommend it because things can just get messy, and I use a garlic extract. But what I've been told by other herbalists who absolutely prescribe that is threading like a string, like a sewing thread through the end of the garlic, so at least you're not going to lose the garlic clove, because that can happen as well. Slippery little suckers, and you want to be able to pull that out. But again, if someone's already inflamed, a garlic clove inserted intravaginally can make things burn more and, further cause that inflammation. So, I would tread carefully with the garlic clove, maybe use that under supervision. But there's just so much more that can be done that's going to be, well, not less harmful, but come with less side effects or likelihood of something going wrong.
And what about little sitz baths and things like that? Washes, your own vagina washes.
Yeah, yep.
Making teas and things like that.
Exactly. Yeah. So, a strong green tea for BV can be used as a sitz bath. There's so just your plastic syringe that you can get down at the pharmacy, like a 10 mil plastic syringe. Green tea can be introduced into the vagina that way as well. So just sitting in the bathtub and doing a low volume irrigation, it's called. Same way with like the lactulose too. So that's one way it can be introduced. And then standing up, having a rinse in the shower, not sort of douching the vagina after with shower water, because you sort of want the contents of the green tea or the lactulose to sort of stay within the vagina wall. Apple cider vinegar is another really cool thing. So diluted, I've
Yes.
stressed diluted
Yes.
apple cider vinegar, so 1-to-1 ratio with some sterile water. The apple cider vinegar contains acetic acid, which is a great antifungal as well. So for candida, that can be used intravaginally as well, just with a clean plastic syringe at the pharmacy. Just note with that as well, for anyone going out to do that now, it has got a pointed nose, those plastic syringes. So if the vagina wall is inflamed, you don't want to tear the wall, you know, with atrophied vaginas as well. Yeah, I do have like smooth tipped or smooth nose syringes as well that I prescribe. But yeah, there's all sorts of things you can do. And you know, any of the herbs, I guess, that I would prescribe in my pessaries could be used intravaginally as well if you were making it in a tea form. I wouldn't be using the alcohol extract unless it was diluted. I'm not too sure about a glycerol-based herb used intravaginally, but anything, you know, with the alcohol base, you wouldn't want to introduce that neat into the vagina. That would need to be diluted, and that's, you know, the whole point of having a cacao butter base or shea butter base or gelatin base. It sort of dilutes the alcohol extract or the alcohol from the alcoholic extract. And then, of course, I'm sure you've discussed it before, but you can always burn off the alcohol from alcoholic tinctures as well if you're wanting to make your own pessaries, or do like a sitz bath with that particular herbal extract, just making sure you're not introducing straight alcohol, because that's gonna burn.
Yeah, beautiful. And it's so good to know. Just get some tests, go in there and do it yourself, because I think these you know, going to, you know, over the counter kind of prescription drugs for these things, they're not necessarily going to be as effective. It might still recur, and then you may not be getting to the root cause of it as well, or in the end bringing the vagina back to balance. You're kind of maybe killing things off, and then it's just in still an acidic, or sorry, an alkaline environment, and that, you know, you're still exposing yourself, and then getting, having recurrent and recurrent infections over time. So I think it's good to just take that time to really get on top of these things so that you can be free and happy and moving around and doing whichever. And this isn't an area of I guess herbal medicine and naturopathy that's talked about a lot as well. I don't think, you know, it's great that you've got this knowledge, and I'd really recommend that anyone listening, if they're feeling like they've got some questions, to have a consultation with Lucy online, or even, she does sessions online, so I'd recommend that.
And I do free 15-minute discovery calls as well. If someone's not sure if they want to take the plunge or not, or maybe they've got some weird, wacky presentation that they want to know if I've heard of, or I may be able to support first. So I do absolutely give free 15-minute discovery calls.
Yeah.
I can be found at lucythenaturopath.com.au.
And I'll put a link up to Lucy's website. Is there anything else that you want to, you know, leave out the listeners with? Like any words of advice before going out there? Or, you know,
I think that, I guess, being able to talk about our intimate health, like, it's such a stigmatized thing, maybe less and less so. I feel like you and I, Lily, in our circles, we can talk about our vaginas until the cows come home. But for a lot of people, even patients I have who are within our age bracket or younger, they feel really vulnerable or really shy about opening up about their intimate health. And I think, me as a practitioner, it's really important to be asking questions and to normalize that, and then people feeling more comfortable about talking about their yonis. And yeah, there's natural shifts that happen across the cycle as well, but there's also things that may not be normal, and someone might be too shy to open up about. So I think just being able to talk about our intimate health more is really important, and I really enjoy doing it, and I've really enjoyed talking about it once again.
thanks, Liz. Well, I've loved talking about it with you as well, and I agree. Yeah, let's just normalize it. And also, I think everyone should just spend time without underwear on, just walking around and
But
use,
not synthetic underwear. Not polyester.
don't, yeah, not
Ideally bamboo.
bamboo, yes.
More breathable.
Breathable underwear. That would be a good idea, I would think.
Yes.
Okay, well, yeah, reach out to Lucy if you have more questions, you want to work with her. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back
Thanks for having me,
soon.
Lily.
Bye.